There are two psukim in the Torah, Devarim Tesvav Zayin, Ki Yevecho Evyon. When a poor person comes your way, Pasach Tiftachis Yodachalo, you must open your hand to him. The Mephoshim say that the Gaon Pasach Tiftach, when you open your hand, your fingers are all of different lengths, that you might be giving different amounts to different poor people. There is another pasuk in Vayikra Chafei, Lamadvav Chiyomuch, Chicha Vachayimuch. The idea of giving tzedakah is to enable somebody else to live. And there are different orders of priority given by the Rambam in Hilchos Matnas Aniyim in terms of what is the best way of giving tzedakah. The best way of giving tzedakah is to give it to somebody before he even needs it. And it's not necessarily putting money in his hand, but by giving a loan or a gift or helping someone find a job. He says, from the Pasuk Vehezakta, but that's the best way of giving tzedakah. Because it doesn't look so much like tzedakah. The next most refined way of giving tzedakah is when you do not know who is going to receive it. Or you don't know who the benefactor is when one is the poor person. So the poor person doesn't know from whom he's receiving it. The person who's giving it doesn't know who's getting it. Because then there's less embarrassment involved. And so the lesser degree is when you don't know who the recipient is, or when the person who's poor doesn't know where the benefactor is. The next one is when you give prior to the request. And then the next level is when you give following a request. The next one is if you are giving, you're not able to give what is really needed, but you're giving some, but you're giving with a smile. You give with a cheerful countenance. And the worst form of tzedakah is when one gives with a heavy heart. Well, you don't really want to give, but you give grudgingly. At least the poor person might be unaware of that, but that is the kind of tzedakah one has to avoid. We know, Chazal tell us, from the pasuk, tzedakah tatzil mimoves, tzedakah can save one from death. And there's a famous story of Rabbi Akiva's daughter in Shabbos Kufnun Rov, who was told, Rabbi Akiva was told, that his daughter would die on the day of her wedding, that she would be bitten by a snake. And as it happened, she stuck her brooch in the wall, unwittingly killing a snake which was about to bite her, and her life was saved. And Rabbi Akiva asked her, what have you been doing today which might have merited you this saving from death? And she said, well, there were so many people busy with a wedding dinner, and there was a poor person standing there, so I gave him my portion of my meal. So we cannot appreciate how important tzedakah is. The Shulchan Aruch just says that every time you give tzedakah, you are spelling out the name of Hashem. Yud Kei Vav Kei. The Yud symbolizes the coin you give to the poor. The Hei is your hand. The Hei is five fingers. The Vav is symbolizing the outstretched arm. And the second Hei is symbolizing the poor person's hand who is receiving. And Rashi says in Bereshis Yud Ches Tes Zayin that tzedakah can transform the Midas Hadin to the Midas Harachamim. When Hashem gives a strict decision in terms of justice which can be harsh, that is turned into mercy by means of giving tzedakah. Hence then we get the Parsha in Terumah of the Yichuli Terumah, and by giving Terumah you are creating a Mikdosh. A mikdosh v'shochanti b'solchom. V'shochanti b'solchom doesn't mean in the mikdosh. Hashem says, I will dwell in them, namely in the hearts of the people who have been giving. I once knew a rabbi who said that if you're ever stuck for a drosha and you're asked to speak at short notice, you just talk about v'osuli mikdosh v'shochanti b'solchom. It fits any occasion. Whether it's a birth, a bris, a bar mitzvah, a wedding, anything. V'osuli mikdosh v'shochanti b'solchom. So wait, it says v'yichuli truma. Rashi says, li lishmi, for my name. What does it mean, lishmi? That it's sincere, it's lishmo. It's done for its own sake, that there are no ulterior motives. But then we can ask a question, because there's a Gemara in Pesachim Daf Ches Amud Aleph, which says that if a person gives tzedakah with the motive that his sick son should be healed, or that a person should live, or that he merits olam haba, so a person's got ulterior motives in giving the tzedakah, he's nevertheless called a complete tzaddik. How can you say he's called a complete tzaddik if he's got these ulterior motives? Well, we'll explore a few answers as we're going on, but there's an answer given by Rav Zalman Sorotskin. He says, well, the Pasuk says v'yikhuli, not v'yitnuli. What's v'yikhuli? V'yikhuli, the biggest challenge in tzedakah is finding people who are dedicated fundraisers. They are v'yikhu, they are taking from everybody else in order to forward to the poor people. So tzedakah is a challenge for everybody here. But for those people who are actually collecting to give to the poor, those are the people who are not having any ulterior motives. We have to be thankful that we've got people here like David Friedman who are collecting money for those who need it, and people like that are doing so lishma. They don't have any ulterior motives, and that is what Rav Zalman says is the pshat in the Yikhuli. But we'll come back to this question in a moment about ulterior motives. Today we're really talking about what the priorities are. We've mentioned the Rambam's eight levels, but in terms of who one gives first, there is in fact a specified list. The bottom line is that you can have the choice of giving to whoever you want. I mean, it's your priority, it's your money, and you can decide who you're giving to. But Chazal do guide us as to what the priorities are. But the most important thing which people might often overlook is that the most important thing for you to remember before you give tzedakah is, are your own needs catered for? Do you have enough parnosa for yourself? And this is the Ramah in Siman Reish on Aleph in Yerideos if Gimel. Do you have enough for yourself to cater for your own needs and your immediate family's needs? Your food, your clothes, your shelter, a roof over your head. It's very nice giving others, but if you've got nothing left for yourself, then it's not regarded as something which you should be doing. So the question which you can ask is, well, how far do I define the needs for myself? Alright, if I have bread and water, but what about if I eat in a luxurious way, do I include that in my basic needs? And there we get different ideas coming out in Poskim as to what is one's own essential needs. The Aruch HaShulchan says that if a person is regularly dining on expensive foods such as meat and cooked dishes, and he's expensively clothed, then he definitely has to give one-tenth of his income to tzedakah. So, does it include if one has an annual holiday in Eilat? David was telling me about people who have been in need, but when he said, well, I'll meet you next Tuesday to discuss it, and this was a fellow who was facing bankruptcy, the banks were closing in on him, and his house was being repossessed, he said he couldn't meet the following Tuesday because he was off with his family to Israel. Oh really? Yeah, and they were staying in a nice hotel. Well, this is not then something which has to be addressed. A person has to sort out his routine and cut down on non-essential expenditure. I was amused to hear from David about the fellow who came to him asking for £50,000, which he needed urgently, and when David asked him, what do you need it for? He said, well, I need to buy some shares in Wolverhampton Football Club. 10 years later, David now regrets not entering a partnership with him because that football club is now in the Premier Division. But there is something in...
Walls aside though, isn't there this idea that you have to keep somebody in the manner to which they have been accustomed to
yes.
living? So if they're used to their annual holiday and they're up, then you've got to keep them in that position.
Well, maybe Bournemouth can be settled on for this year, but there is a Gemara Ksuva, Son of Zion, which looks at this subject. So although one does just give basics, one does give according to a person's dignity, there is something on that. But that doesn't mean that you make them rich and help them to endure luxurious holidays. There's a man who came asking for money to Rav Nechemia in this Gemara. And Rav Nechemia asked him, what do you live on? And he said, I live on really good fatty meat and on old antique wine. And Rav Nechemia said to him, well, I'm just sitting down now to a meal of lentil soup. Would you like to join me? So the fellow grudgingly ate these lentils and he died. Apparently from not eating the food which he's used to having. And the Gemara says there, Nebuch, woe to him, woe to Rav Nechemia, but the dead man should not have cultivated such luxurious habits and lifestyles. It once happened to us where we had a knock on our door from somebody to whom we had given money previously, and a young man knocked on our door with a taxi standing outside with its engine running, and he had just come from Heathrow Airport, and he said, "I've got no money to pay the taxi. Could you help me?" And that was a time when we were still newly married. My wife was working and she was taking the bus a long way, and she was saying to me, "Listen, I've got to take the bus, and he wants to take his taxi. Why should we pay the taxi driver?" And she gave him a bit of a telling off, but we realised there'd be a bit of a chilul Hashem, because the taxi driver wasn't being paid, and his passenger was somebody who looked like a Haredi Jew. So we paid the taxi driver, but my wife said to him, "Look, don't come back here again." This same person who had been to us the Purim before, dressed up in a very Haredi kind of style, we one Shabbos were walking past a laundrette, and we saw him inside washing his clothes, and he wasn't then dressed the Haredi way. He looked very embarrassed when we saw him. So the halacha actually is that you are allowed to check out somebody who asks you for money. But if it's just for food, you don't have to check him out. If the person asks you for food, you give. And if it turns out that he's cheating you, you've still got your mitzvah of tzedakah. But if a person wants more than just money for food, then it's perfectly legitimate to check him out. There was also a man came to Rava who said he lives on fat chicken and old wine. And Rava suggested that he was causing a burden on the community. And the beggar said to him, "Yes, but Hashem provides a person according to his needs and according to his dignity." And at that moment, the sister of Rava walked in serving a meal with fat chicken and old wine. And he hadn't seen his sister for 13 years, and she just turned up at that moment. And there's the same kind of issue in that Gemara with Mar Ukva, who gave his son on Erev Yom Kippur 400 zuz to give tzedakah. And this son went to a person's house who turned out to be quite rich, and they were actually spraying in the air a kind of perfume made from very expensive old wine. But when Mar Ukva heard how delicate this person is, that he needs such a lifestyle, Mar Ukva doubled the amount that he gave this person. So, where you draw the line, there has to be some common sense involved. Now, going to a bit of Nach, we're going to bring from Shmuel Beis something which was done by David HaMelech. Shmuel Beis Peret Chof Pasuk Chaf Rov, it talks about the different officers who acted for David HaMelech, and then there's a Pasuk which says, "Iro hayo iri, hayo kohen leDavid." David HaMelech appointed a specific kohen to receive his matnas kohana. What David HaMelech gave by way of truma, and by way of pidyon haben or pesach hamor, any money which would go to a kohen, David HaMelech designated this person Iro HaYoiri. And Rashi there says, Lo HaYonosin Kal Matanos Kohana Shelo. He was designated for that purpose. And in the next pasuk, which is the next chapter, it says, Vayirov Bimei David. There was a famine which came about in the days of David. So the Gemara in Erevin Samach Gimel Amud Aleph says that David was making a big mistake, and the mistake he was making caused the famine. And that is what he was giving all to one person, all his matnas kohuna to one kohen. And the Radak there says that those who give to just one bring along a famine. Alright, he was doing his mitzvah, he was giving truma and so on, but to give it just to one kohen and leave all other kohanim out of the picture was wrong. And from this din of teruma we learn the din of tzedakah. Truma is a kind of tzedakah because you are funding the kohanim in order that they can carry out the temple service. And Tosfos in Kiddushin Chav Zayin and the Mordechai in Baba Basra Perek Aleph bring this down to halacha that you must diversify when it comes to giving tzedakah. You have to share out. You don't just give to one particular source, and this is brought down in the Shulchan Aruch Rishon on Zayin. So you have to give more than one. That doesn't necessarily mean that you give a very, very tiny amount to thousands and thousands of aniyim. What you give has to be perhaps something useful. But the general reasons underlying this is that it benefits the poor if tzedakah is shared out amongst them, rather than just one person getting. But it also benefits the one who is giving, because the one who is giving is increasing his number of donations, and his mitzvah is therefore greater if he's giving the same amount of money to more people rather than to just one person.
£1 or 100
The Poskim say that there's an inyan here of balance. That if you're giving just a very small amount to lots of people, then if it's so negligible, then it's not really worthwhile. It's still got to be some substance, but if you've got £100, £1 is of a use to a poor person. So you'll give to 100 different aniyim, then rather than £100 to one aniyim, in that is more preferable. Obviously, it depends on the circumstances of the case, but a poor person whose house is being repossessed, you're more likely to give them £100 than £1. But in general terms of giving tzedakah, and we're going to talk about the different priorities and provisos.
What about every day? I'm sure you have five people come during davening, and you give your prepaid 50p on £1 vouchers,
Well, I'm going to have to be very careful what I say today, because I'm going to get lots of charities or tzedakahs ringing me up afterwards saying, why didn't you give preference to me, and why didn't you give preference to me? But in the terms of what Chazal tell us as to priorities, the people who are coming around in shul who are collecting for most of us abroad come very low down the list. So I'm not suggesting you don't give them, but if we're now going to look at now the priority list which is set out by Chazal, and maybe I'll start off at the end of the list. You are giving tzedakah, and you do get your mitzvah if you give to anybody who's in need. So there you've got your mitzvah.
You may want to talk about the legality of giving these charity vouchers to individuals as well, but how legal it is.
I'm not here. My remit doesn't include talking about Her Majesty's Inspectors of Taxes rules. We'll deal with halacha, but
I think that is an important point.
Our job here today. We're discussing now what is a legitimate tzedakah, and we said if somebody asks for food and you haven't checked them out, you still give, and the Rambam says you've still got your mitzvah. The next priority up is people living in Eretz Yisrael have a zechus, because they are living in Eretz Yisrael, they receive tzedakah. So here you are, people are coming to collect in shul, they are from Eretz Yisrael, you give. Very nice. People who are in Yushalayim, this is a Yesh Omrim, but people who are in Yushalayim, Ir HaKodesh, get a greater priority than those who are living in the whole of Eretz Yisrael. And next above that are people living in your own city. And if you're living in London, or if you're living in a particular district of London, like Hendon Golders Green, then your priority in giving tzedakah is to poor people from that locality. So that means to say that if David comes to you and says, I'm collecting for somebody who is in need, who lives in this locality, or is a member of our shul, then you are duty bound to give him much more than those people coming round to collect for a Moshe in Eretz Yisrael. Much as we would like to give them, that is where your priority lies. I think Henry once wrote a letter into a national newspaper about this issue. Am I right? And that priority has to be given. Charity begins at home, and that is halacha.
So what did you say was the very lowest?
Well, the very lowest it says is anybody. Any stranger from anywhere around the world. So if they come to you from Shanghai or Melbourne or Timbuktu, you give. Well, it's a mitzvah to give Russia, don't get me wrong. I'll come to the subject of Gentiles in a minute, okay? Because the Poskim do write that there is a mitzvah to give non-Jews, yes, but we'll come to that.
In the pecking order, where is Manchester?
Manchester. Well, it depends which relative of mine you are. Anyway,
you said London.
Yeah, well, England comes before Eretz Yisrael. London comes before Manchester. Hendon Golders Green come before London. South Hill. Then come your neighbours. If a neighbour of yours is in need, then that neighbour gets more priority than the others we've just mentioned. And then above neighbours come your close friends. If a friend of yours is in need, then the fact is that it's more possible for them to achieve getting some money from you rather than from other people. You're giving tzedakah to your close friends who are in need. And then, even more important though than that, which might surprise you, and that is a divorced spouse. If a divorced spouse is in need of money, then that person has a greater importance than the others we've just mentioned. Then in greater importance comes your wider family, like your cousins, your uncles and your aunts come next in importance, and then higher than them are your brothers or your sisters. So if your brother or your sister is in need, you have to give them much more priority than any of the others that we've given. Well, you might think there aren't many more important people than your brothers and your sisters. But next in importance comes...
Sons and daughters.
Yeah, I'm coming. Next in importance comes your grandchildren, if they're in need. They are considered even more important than your brothers or your sisters. There is a debate which the Steichemet talks about, whether grandparents come before brothers, and he puts children first, but then grandparents come before brothers. Then after that comes your Rebbe, who is not being paid to be your Rebbe, somebody who is teaching you Torah, so to speak. Then comes your adult children, your grown-up children, who are then even more important than all the others we've mentioned. And we're now entering a phase where we are setting aside the diversify rule. Well, there are poskim who say once the children are above the age of six, then... send them out to work. But, if they're over the mitzvah, or if they've left home and they're no longer under your care, you nevertheless have a duty to support them if they are in need, more than all those others we've mentioned.
Where does Hakmatis Kalak come into
it? Hakmatis Kalak is not immediate family if it's not a relation. Achnosas Kala is very important, and there's lots written, especially about orphan girls marrying them off and so on, because there is another table given. There is another table given of orders of priorities, which are meant to interact and blend with the list we're now giving of people. And that order is Pikuach Nefesh, where there's a danger to life. To save a person's life, you will give. And all these other providers are set aside. You'll do anything to help save a person's life. And that can include spiritual life, Pidyon Shavuim. Torah study, to be able to finance somebody who is learning Torah, is just a lesser category than Pikuach Nefesh. It's a very great mitzvah to help somebody to be learning Torah. Without Torah, the world can't go around. So we have to be able to finance Torah learning. Somebody who's got medical bills, one has to help. Then comes building or maintaining one's local shul. Hear that? So to help to build or maintain one's local shul, that is important. Not as important as those others we've just mentioned, but that becomes more important than helping an orphan girl to get married. So Achnosas Kala comes on those five things, comes at the bottom of that list. But it's still a very great mitzvah, and there's so much written about the importance of helping orphan girls to get married. So we can't underestimate it, that is how it works. But when we're talking about different people, then the higher up the list we go, the more important it is. So once we've entered the field of adult children, we then come to grandparents. Grandparents are even more important to help when it comes to tzedakah. Now earlier we were talking about the diversify rule, namely that we learned from the mistake of David HaMelech that you should share out your tzedakah as best as possible. But that diversify rule is set aside when it comes to these very close relations. That is to say that if you've got a certain amount to give to tzedakah and your very close relations are in need, then give the whole lot to them. That is legitimate. So although we said before that you should share out, you give the whole lot to them when it comes to adult children, grandparents, and then most important of all, parents. Rabbeinu Bechaya says at the beginning of Vayechi, Misha mafanes ovi ve'imo tzedaka gedola hu she'ein lamalo mimeno. There is nothing more important and there's nothing greater than when one gives tzedaka to one's needy parents who are destitute and do not have money, than if one can give them money. That is the greatest zechus. And so the Chasam Sefer emphasizes in his Tshuvas Reish Chaf Tes that even if it means giving all your tzedakah money away just to your parents, that is the greatest form of tzedakah. And then of course comes your wife and children, that you have an obligation to support your wife and children in any case. So that's not really tzedakah. That's not really from your Maaser money. You've given your wife a ksuvah that you're going to support her, so you have to give her according to her needs. And so there is a fine line to be drawn between your obligations to your wife and children and to what is tzedakah. You have to educate your children for Talmud Torah, but that's obvious. So that's not necessarily within the field of tzedakah. But what you might do over and above your general duties, that would be coming within the category of tzedakah. There are different customs as to when one is actually giving tzedakah. There's a custom to give before davening. There's a custom to give during davening at Vayevarech David, where one says Va'oshev Hakolod Mefanech V'Atamoshev Bakel. That some people have the minhag to go up to the tzedakah box and put in at that moment. But what is something very much overlooked is when one goes around during davening, and you raised this just before, there shouldn't be any disturbance going on which distracts from the davening. There are some very important parts of davening, Shema, Chazos, Hashat, Kriyas HaTorah, when one should be concentrating entirely on what one's doing, and Osek B'mitzvah, Potter Min HaMitzvah. When you are indulging in one mitzvah, you are potter from doing other mitzvahs. Now this might cause me receiving a lot of criticism, but the Prima Godin writes in Hilchas Tanis, so I'm only quoting, Simon Tov Kuf Samach Vav in Mishpso Zov Gimel, he criticizes those who ask their sons to go around with a tzedakah box during Chazaras Hashat, because it's mafriya, it's disturbing. And what happens is, often they shake the box loudly to draw attention to themselves, and then you can't hear the Shliach Tzibur. And then there are people who want to have change, so they open up the box and they take out and put in, and all this is distracting, and then they can't, it's so stuffed because of all the charity vouchers, so they can't easily squeeze it in, and so there's a bit of a bother there. And Rav Chaim Kanievsky says, "V'efshad ein chayov in litein lohem." It's possible that one's got no chiyuv at all to give to these people. The osek b'mitzvah, potter min ha-mitzvah. One is involved in one mitzvah, we should give to another one.
A few months ago, during Shacharis, a guy with a big black hat and a big long black hat.
Well, let's not describe their outfit.
Factual. Went up something, you have to raise an eyebrow, and this chap with a big black hat and a long black beard said, to fill up with rabbanon tzedakah with the rice. When you had black eyes.
The Rambam says, in Hilchos Talmud Torah, Perek Beis, Halacha Beis, that Talmud Torah comes first before all other things. But in Halacha Gimel he says, if you have a mitzvah overes, a mitzvah which is going to pass by and you'll lose the chance to do it, then that other mitzvah comes first before Talmud Torah. In the same way, if you are Osek B'Tfilah and your time to do so is now, and your Tfilah B'Tzibur is now, then your tzedakah can wait till after the davening. Chas v'shalom, I'm not going to criticize people who come in. I once helped somebody myself come into a shul to collect when he told me that all the tzedakah he received was stolen, and I believed him. It was that same guy we saw in the laundrette. Two months later. But there are certain shuls in the locality. I can tell you that in Mook Shul there's a notice up asking Mishalachim not to come in from Baruch Shomar.
Go down and have a look.
Oh, it's here as well.
From Baruch Hu.
Until after Kedusha.
Kriyas
HaTorah.
Look on the door.
Oh, they can't read. It's interesting. This shul has it. In Hargis there's a rule set up on the notice board. In Mook Shul there's a rule on the notice board.
After Chazaras Hashatz. Some shuls, they say that.
Yeah. After Chazaras Hashatz. I was once in a certain shtibul, davening Shachris, and the Gabba was going round with a Mashulach collecting money. The Mashulach basically thought that he'll get more money by asking the Gabba to come round with him, because everybody knows the Gabba, and people will be more embarrassed not to give if the Gabba is there. So he asked the Gabba to go round, and the Gabba agreed. So during the repetition, during Chazaras Hashatz, this Gabba was going round saying to people, would you kindly give to this person, and most of it's very important, da 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 da. So after the Chazaras Hashatz, I said to this Gabba, are you aware that according to the Rambam, the Ikar Tefillah B'Tzibur is the repetition, not your quiet Shemoneh Esrei. The main Tefillah B'Tzibur is the Chazaras Hashatz, which you should be listening to, not so much the quiet Shemoneh Esrei. So he shrugged his problem and said, I don't have a problem with that. There's some people whom you can't change, but the halakha is very clear cut about this. If someone goes around with a stocker box, and a chas v'shalom, I wouldn't criticize if son of the rabbi is going around with a stocker box, and there's minimal disturbance, and you can still listen carefully to the chazal sashats when you put your coin into the box, fine. You know, there is nothing presumed against that, but the prima godin does discourage young boys going around with a stocker box during chazal sashats.
I always assume that actually there's an Indian that puts it, of giving stuff a drink as well, just because emotions, that's exactly where the box can carry on. Is that not the case?
No, there is no source to say that. There is the source in Vayvarech David that one gives at that time where one says, Va'osha va'kavod melfanecha, va'tom osha va'kav. But there is no, as far as I'm aware, no custom to give at other times, which has a credible source. So there are other good times for giving. There, I mean, Hoggy before one travels, when a woman lights, before she lights the Shabbos candles, Elul or Erev Rosh Hashanah, special times, Purim of course, Matanos Levyonim is a special mitzvah, before Pesach there's Kimcha de Fischa, on Tanis, any time as a kapara for one's sins, it is correct to give tzedakah. But what we've said with all the priorities and occasions, there are a number of different provisos, and we've mentioned pikuach nevesh. If there's ever a danger to life, any lesser priority of the list we gave becomes a top priority. Now, if a relative is in need, that relative takes precedence even for non-compelling items. So we've spoken already about compelling items and compelling items. So that is to say that Hachnosas Kala, although it came down the list below Talmud Torah, if that is a close relation, then the Chometz Chaim says in Avas Chesed Chelek Aleph, then it becomes a greater priority if it's for a close relation. Another proviso is that when you have a choice for the same category between a man and a woman, then the woman comes first. You give priority to the woman above the man. We don't want women to have to suffer the indignity of going around knocking on doors. And then if you are still in the same category and you've got a Kohen and a Levi Nisrael, you give the Kohen first, and then the Levi second and the Nisrael. Now what if a person is a transgressor? What if this person whom you see in the laundrette on Shabbos comes to you afterwards and asks for tzedakah? Do you have a mitzvah to give that person? So it's written that someone who is over lahachis, somebody who does averus, and the averus are in defiance of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, even if it's just defying one mitzvah, then osolitein, it's forbidden to give that person. And even if that person does the avera only once. But what if the person does these averus, not because he's lahachis, because he's defiant of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but because he tries to be a frum guy, but he's got a lust, he's got a taiva, to do maybe certain things which he knows he shouldn't be doing, then there is a question. Yesh le'esar, but some say ain't isur b'dova. The poskim are generally saying, you're not committing an avera by giving him, but you don't have to give him. There is, of course, the question of a tinek shenishba, somebody who just doesn't know better. So if somebody comes out of Russia and just doesn't know what certain averas are, obviously you give him tzedakah. And even if a person is doing averus for his taiva, it's really only if it's frequently. If it's a one-off, then you give him the benefit of the doubt. Now, somebody asked me about giving to non-Jews as well as Jews. The Ramah writes in Siman Reishon on Aleph Sif Aleph that one gives to non-Jewish tzedakah as well as Jewish ones. And it was very heartening to see the news last night that Zaka, the Israeli first aid, Israeli Chevra Kedisha organization, are out in Haiti and were digging out last night eight survivors, digging out, it was during Shabbos actually, they were digging out eight survivors, Haiti people from under the wreckage of a university building, a great Kiddush Hashem. So there's a mitzvah to give non-Jewish sources as well as Jewish ones. I beg your pardon?
Yes,
one breaks Shabbos to save a guy's life.
Yes. If the big wall comes down, and the Jewish person, you won't be going to turn up. If it's a non-Jew, you don't think he's dead. You think he's dead, then you can leave him.
Yeah,
there is always a suffix under the rubble of an earthquake damaged building if a person is alive or dead. And when there's a suffix, one does everything possible to save human life, non-Jewish life as well as Jewish life. That's a subject for another shia as to all the reasonings behind it, but it's quite clear in halakha that one. There is, in fact, a famous story of the Satmar Rebbe, who came to his own house and found an African-American non-Jewish man crying on his doorstep because he was destitute and had no money. And he invited him in, and he actually gave him a job to help in the household. And this African-American guy learned Yiddish fluently, much to the surprise of everybody else, and went around telling everybody how well the Satmar Rebbe treated him. Yes.
Now, they actually didn't have to be in that situation to ask us to go to Shabbos and pay down their Shabbos. So one situation is obviously the local doctor who was called out that they actually had to be in the Shabbos and pay down their Shabbos. In that particular situation, they didn't have to be there and they could stay in Israel, if you like. And there would be no issue if you pay down their Shabbos. So how is that justified?
Once they're in that situation where they are there, and they've taken the decision to be there to help the earthquake victims, which in itself is wonderful, because there are countries neighbouring Israel which have much better resources who don't seem to be sending help. Once that Kiddush Hashem has been created and they are in that situation, then their obligation is to help everybody, non-Jewish as well as Jewish.
In that sort of scale of priority, if they're two separate lists, how does the helping people learn Torah compared to helping poor people? You have a choice of one of the other.
Well, somebody who is learning Torah full time.
Unless they're not particularly poor, if you have an institution rather than
having somebody who is learning Torah full time, who is not therefore earning money, is assumed to be in the category of Oni. That's not necessarily the case. The person might be very rich with shares in Wolverhampton Football Club, so then you don't have a mitzvah of giving that person. But if you're giving to an institution which is catering generally for a range of yeshiva bachrim, it's safe to assume that they are all aniyim, because those who are not aniyim will be paying their own way inside that institution, and that the money you're giving is helping the others.
The government actually gets it there. Some of these issues are quite relatively authoritative. They're building some very nice facilities there.
Well, it's your own personal choice as to whether to give a particular institution or not.
So when you assume they're not aniyim, then you actually determine your credit to yeshiva.
If you feel from your own judgment that those who are approaching you for money are not aniyim, then you don't have an obligation to give. But if you do give, if you do give the shame mitzvah tzedakah, you're still getting a mitzvah.
But you don't have to support the Torah institution that's not aniyim. If it's not for the fact that people can't
they are furthering Torah, then there is a mitzvah to give tzedakah to that institution.
That's my original question. How does that compare to giving to aniyim? Which one has got preference?
Aniyim, people who are generally who are destitute have priority. If somebody's got nothing to eat, then that has to come first. There's no question.
And excuse me, well, often you get people coming, they finance operations, people who've got cancer, whatever it is. That must be bordering on the Pekuat Nefesh situation.
Yes, but you've got to ask yourself, how directly is it affecting Pekuat Nefesh? Yes.
I've got one other question. With regard to this tzedakah, is this tzedakah part of your master required obligation?
Yes.
Or is it over and above? Part of.
Yeah, when we're talking about tzedakah, we're talking about what you're giving from your maaser.
Right, so if you're giving goyim, in other words, the Haiti fund that they're trying to raise money for, let's say, and you say you can count as part of your tzedakah, is that also part of your maaser?
Well, the Rama is saying that you're treating it equally in tzedakah terms, so it comes from your maaser. Yes. I mean, I haven't seen it written explicitly, but that would be, I think, the logical answer to give in the light of what the Rama writes in Siman Resh Nun Aleph Sif Aleph. Tzedakah is often translated as charity. That's how we translate it. But the way that the English language or other languages speak of charity, being charitable and being nice to others, doesn't go as far as what this word tzedakah really means. The word tzedakah comes from tzaddik, tzidkus, which means righteousness. And therefore, we have to understand the framework in which tzedakah applies. Tzedakah is a form of chesed. Chesed, kindness to others. And when we're talking about chesed, we obviously are aware of what the different kinds of chesed are. But there's an interesting me'iri I'd like to quote in Perkei Avos. It says in Pirkei Avos that you should receive a person with a cheerful face. You should greet a person with a smile. Always be nice and friendly. And what if you don't like the person? What if for some reason you feel as though this person is not a friend of yours? Is it falsehood to smile at the person? So the Meiri says that chesed is so important that it breaks the boundaries even of sheker. That is to say that you should smile at a person even if you don't like that person, because that is chesed. Chesed is so important that it breaks all these boundaries and frameworks. The power of chesed is such that you can even tell a lie in order to perform chesed, or at least divert from the truth. We've once discussed about when you can divert from the truth, and this chesed issue is one of them. And so when one is giving tzedakah, even if one is compromising in certain ways on what you feel is the way that you're giving tzedakah, and we started off talking about the Gemara in Pesachim, Daf Chesamud Aleph, which says, well, I want my son to get better, or I want to make sure I get Olam Haba, and so your reasons of tzedakah are not really that genuine. You are compromising your standards. Nevertheless, the Gemara there said, you're still called a complete tzaddik. And we asked the question, how can you be called a complete tzaddik? You've got ulterior motives. It's not 100% genuine. To get yourself out of trouble, you can give a neighbor, I'll give tzedakah if I get out of this trouble. In order to pass exams, I'll give tzedakah if I pass those exams. So it might be argued that you're not giving genuine tzedakah, but the Gemara is saying that you're still called a complete tzaddik if you give tzedakah with those stipulations. Why? Because tzedakah comes within this category of chesed. And chesed, even if compromised, provided that it's chesed, is still called chesed. Just like we see with the falsehood you might be displaying by smiling to somebody you don't like, that is chesed. So tzedakah is so important as a form of chesed that even if you're compromising standards, because tzedakah comes from tzedkus, it should come from your heart, that you're supportive. And when poor people suffer, they need to feel that they're being protected and they're being loved. And if you give them that feeling that they're being protected and they're being loved, even if your own motive is not 100% genuine, since you are performing that very high degree of chesed, that is the importance. So we say in the pasuk, Ma'eis kol ish asher yidvenu libo, back to the truma idea. Yidvenu libo, nadova, means something which is volunteered, which comes from the heart. That if you are motivated by your willing heart, that must be the greatest chesed of all. And then even if you're giving to somebody who you then see in the laundrette on a Shabbos, you've done your mitzvah. You don't have to feel as though you've wasted your money. Thank you very much.